Hey, Ripsy, this is Dominating DeAndre Ayton. Your radio team brings you all the games and all the insight in between on the Section 113 podcast with Travis Demers and Michael Holton.
We are back after a week hiatus like the rest of the NBA. It is the Section 113 podcast with Michael Holton. I'm Travis Demers. Thanks so much for being here with us as the Blazers back in action tonight against the Denver Nuggets. It is a beautiful, sunny February day in Portland. All things are good right now, Michael, and it is good to see you, my friend.
It's good to see you, Travis Demers, and it's good to return from All-Star Weekend. I, like the rest of the NBA viewing audience, watched a variety of All-Star game events with mixed emotions.
Before we get into a little bit of the things we wanted to today, you mentioned mixed emotions. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, there's so much attention in media and social media around All-Star Weekend and its events, whether the events are good or less than good, or whether the events should be changed. And sometimes I was watching events and I didn't know what they were, like the skills challenge, and so many things looked different and felt different. And I, as you are aware, I'm in the business, and I was looking at the product and I didn't understand it. I wasn't prepared for it. And so that created some mixed emotions.
What did you think of the LED court? Because I thought it was pretty cool.
No. I like the LED court because as an older American, I'm not a gamer. And so I'm not stimulated by a lot of things that I see on screens. And when I saw the LED court, I was like, man, that's so cool.
Can I give you my brief take on all of this?
Yes, please do.
So sports are things that are really important to us because they shape a lot of who we are, right? And so much about this stuff is nostalgia. And for me, when I was growing up, I loved the three-point contest. I loved the slam dunk contest. You know, my friends and I would go out into my driveway and we would, you know, draw the arc with chalk and then do our own three-point contest and lower the rim and do our slam dunk contest. That's still the way that I have to dunk, by the way. So we would do all of these things as kids, and it was new. It was a really great time in the early 90s when I first started paying attention to this stuff. It's not the same. The game is not the same. It's never going to be the same. Nothing is the same. And sure, there's always things that you could do. You look at the NFL, they have a flag football game now. But I think a lot of people have a hard time letting go of the fact that things just aren't what they were, so they complain about it.
Yeah, and you know, Travis, I think I should get on the committee. I wanna weigh in on all of this. I've got some ideas about the All-Star game that I think people need to hear. Like, make the All-Star game four quarters, and each quarter there's a winner and a loser, and there's a point total. Like, I played in the CBA when every game was worth 7 points, every quarter was worth 1 point, and the win was worth 3 points. So you could win 7-0, you could win 6-1, you could win 5-2, but it placed a value on each quarter, which placed more value on each possession. But where I'm going with this, Travis, is I don't think the NBA and its players, its All-Star players, are interested in competing on All-Star Weekend. No. And that's the concern.
Yeah. I mean, look, they don't want to get hurt. You know, it's a totally different environment now in terms of injuries and health and money and all of these things. And, you know, these players are an investment to themselves. And if you go out and you hurt yourself in the All-Star game, you're done for the year, or something terrible happens. Well, guess what? That is a life-altering effect. And there's just a lot of stuff that goes into that.
Well, before we pivot from that, and I'm sure we will soon, I want to take this one last stab at what should happen, Travis, is I think there should be a pot of gold for the winning team that goes to the charity of their choice. That each team is playing for $500,000 for a half a dozen charities that team collectively wants to contribute to and to better the life of. And we're going to – so now, if we don't play hard or play well, we're letting down somebody. Let's create a value one way or the other.
Yeah, I like that. But as soon as you mentioned Pot of Gold, my 3-year-old has been talking about leprechauns and St. Patrick's Day because he loves when the leprechauns cause mischief. So you say Pot of Gold, all I'm thinking about right now is leprechauns and St. Patrick's Day.
Well, anything that motivates, and if it motivates your son, then I think you should have a pot of gold coins on the kitchen table every time you call him to dinner.
Yeah, I think it would be the chocolate coins that would motivate him. All right, so we get back into things with 24 games left in the season. Obviously, the All-Star break is not the midway point. The season is 2/3 over. And this is what we're looking at with the Trailblazers right now. You're looking at a team that, is not going to make the playoffs. Okay, the Trailblazers right now are 15-39. They are in that bottom grouping that is essentially playing for a lottery position right now. They would be in the fifth spot, one game better in terms of wins and losses than the Charlotte Hornets. They're not getting into the top three. They're not dropping back to 6 or 7. So when you're looking about draft position and people talking about how wins and losses affect that, they're going to be in the fourth or fifth position for the lottery, almost regardless of what the results are the rest of the season. So I don't think there's going to be a ton of jockeying for position in that top 5 or 6. It's essentially set with, one or two things switching here or there. So the injuries of this team continue. We know that Robert Williams III, of course, is not coming back this season. Shaedon Sharpe may or may not, but it sounds like there's a chance that he will return this year. We don't know the story with Moses Brown. Malcolm Brogdon will be reevaluated soon. Scoot Henderson dinged up a little bit. He was on the latest injury report for this game. He is out with an adductor strain, which that was something with him that I had not heard about. Jabari Walker, questionable. I think that's just, a day-to-day situation there. And then Dwop Reith has been extended or converted into a full-time contract, much deserved. Of course, Delano Banton was added, and now Ashton Hagans has been added on a two-way contract. So he's not a 10-day player anymore. He is a two-way player for as long as he is under contract with the Trailblazers. So that's kind of where we are right now. That's the injuries, the wins and losses, just kind of the story of what's happening. And you look at the next few games, 3 games on this homestand with Denver, Charlotte, and Miami, and then you go back on the road. So all of these things here, with 24 games left in the season, what stands out to you as the first thing that you're looking at tonight and the very near future?
Development minutes. Obviously, for the reasons you just stated, the roster that we're putting on the floor today is not the roster we broke training camp with.
No.
So you've got to calibrate or recalibrate expectations, number one. And number two, what you're looking at is a collection of who's available, right? Availability has become really the most important thing on a nightly basis for the Trailblazers. The injury list has been incredible for most of the year in terms of what the team is able to put on the floor. So when you asked me that question, I'd sum it up with 2 words: development. And so we're watching players develop with their opportunity. And then if you widen the lens from development minutes, I'd call it, asset development. Players are the product. They are the assets of the organization. And you have to take what's available and you put it on the floor and, in the most competitive way possible with the goal at the start of the game of winning, but you're also assessing and developing assets.
You are, and I'm glad you brought that up because there's something a little deeper into the weeds that I want to get into you with that. Because when Joe Cronin and his staff assess things in the summer, right, this team has 4 draft picks, 2 first round, 2 second round, unless for some reason the Warriors have a top 4 pick, then that'll convey to another year. Do they want to add 4 rookies this summer to a team that already has significantly more rookie minutes than any other team in the NBA? So what do they do there? How do they alter this roster? How do they change things? So even though this team is still, 58 games into the season, there still have not been a ton of minutes of certain guys playing together. And you're still trying to figure out what that all looks like. So in the final 24 games, you're looking at the pairing of Anfernee Simons and Scoot Henderson. Who is better playing off the ball? Can Ant play off the ball? If Shaedon Sharpe returns, how does he fit into that mix? What does the veteran leadership look like? And what is the next move in terms of building this roster? And you talk about development. Evaluation to me is just as important in this stretch, because this is not the roster today that when Joe Cronin looks at things 2, 3, 4 years from now, when he believes this team is going to be a contender, this is not the roster that this team will have on the floor then. So he needs to figure out what pieces are going to work best with who and assess that in these next 24 games as well.
Yeah, I think the work best with who part is difficult. Because if I can kind of try to respond.
Yeah.
This team was built around veteran leadership, strategic veteran leadership. Jeremy Grant, Robert Williams III, Malcolm Brogdon, Anfernee Simons. I mean, I think that was the core grouping of guys that were going to be the veteran leadership of this team. And to your point, they haven't been able to play together for extended stretches or extended games. So the play together with part is hard, you know, because if those guys aren't available now and you're evaluating young guys, well, you can't have the young guys on the floor with guys that aren't available.
Right.
So I think you end up looking at the players that are on the floor and assessing their skills, their value, and then you kind of profile. Like Delano Blanton, Ashton, what's their skill set? How transferable is it in the NBA? Where does it fit the strategic plan of this team? I don't think anybody has to answer to today.
Yeah, and you brought up Banton, and he's an interesting case because last year the Trailblazers brought in a couple of guys after the trade deadline that they were evaluating. Guys who had bounced around the league a little bit, you know, the Cam Reddishes, the Kevin Knoxes, saying, okay, we've got an opportunity to bring some of these guys in. They're going to play. We'll see what we got and if they can be a big part of the future. Well, the answer was no. Okay. Now you have somebody in Delano Banton who is a 6'9" ball handler who has got confidence on the floor that it's not that he's bounced around. He just really hasn't had much of an opportunity. You can't teach size, obviously. And having somebody like him, this is just another player that you can evaluate and see what you got. And to me, for a young guy like him, there is a lot of potential there to see what you can extract from him.
Well, yeah, Travis, when you look at the last 12 months or so of what this team has done transactionally.
Yeah.
And you look at how you get a Tumani Kamara, right? You look at how you get a Dewop Reed. Never a result of the transactional nature of the business with a team that is in development mode, trying to find its way, find different pieces. And that's the part that I get excited about in a season like this. Like, where are the diamonds in the rough?
Mm-hmm.
And let's look at them. And let's assess them. And then from a fan broadcaster standpoint, we can project how Dewop Reed can play for the Blazers in the future, what Tumani Kamara's role might be in the future.
Jabari Walker.
Does it fit? So that's kind of where we are as fans and as broadcasters looking at this team down the stretch.
The last two seasons post All-Star break has been tough, okay? And with that, we have seen a majority of the rotation players either injured or unavailable. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I could be wrong, but I don't think – obviously, some guys are injured. But you're going to see veterans. You're going to see the young players. You're going to see a chunk, at the least, of the core out there on the floor for the remaining 24 games in some form or another. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think we're going to see some interesting things from a standpoint of player groupings. Right? You look at Scoot Henderson as a point guard, Scoot Henderson as a quarterbacking point guard, Scoot Henderson as a scoring point guard, Scoot Henderson on the floor off the ball, mm-hmm. is an example. That's three different ways to deploy Scoot Henderson in a basketball game. And I think we're going to see different looks like that with different players. Can he play on the ball? Can he play off the ball? Is he an on-ball defender? Is that the strength? Is he a better off-ball defender? So let's play some zone. Let's do some trapping. Let's look at the rotations. You know, we're going to see so many different things that I think from a fan standpoint, we may see something that seemingly lacks continuity because of the assessment of skills that is needed in real game action.
All right. Now, let me ask you something on this, because it's a great point that you brought up. They're going to be trying out a bunch of different things. Some of them are going to work, but some of them aren't. And you have a unique opportunity here. I'm not saying wins and losses don't matter, because wins and losses always matter. But, you know, win or lose, your position in the standings really isn't going to change. So you have an in-game opportunity here to try some things. And that does not happen in the NBA very often. So with that, if you're trying a bunch of different things, and this works or that doesn't, or that works or that doesn't, from a coaching perspective, how do you give some of these things enough time to flush out and say that, okay, this thing that we weren't doing in January, we're off to a little bit of a rocky start with that here in February or March, but I can see the potential here. So let's keep going with this and flush it out until it works. How do you do that?
Well, you know, and what I put out there was a hypothetical in terms of lack of continuity and experimenting with different things that may very well happen, but it might not.
Right.
I mean, this team may put as many veterans on the floor as possible and a sprinkling of young players to play with them to see different combinations could be what we see as well, Travis. So at the end of the day, there's two or three things that are happening every night. The first is you're trying to win basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the goal of winning basketball games is changing. Even though from a fan standpoint, it's like, yeah, but this guy's not playing, that guy's not playing, and why is he playing so much? We can do that as fans. But at the end of the day, they keep score because you're trying to win. And so within the conversation we're having about players and chemistry and rotations and veteran versus young, you know, we may see all young guys on the floor, but we may not.
Yeah, you bring up the fan perspective. And I live in that space a little bit, more than I probably should sometimes. So I hear what fans say, and I hear the narratives from fans. And some of those conversations are, I'm just going to be blunt with it, we should be losing every single game to help our draft position. There is a portion of the fans that feel that way. And I understand that perspective, and I understand wanting to move up the lottery board there. But really, it's not going to change. Wins and losses are not going to affect maybe one spot, 5-4. So I don't think that even applies if that was something that the Blazers even wanted to do, because it really just is not going to change that much. So you talk about winning games, okay? And when Chauncey Billups has, this is his group of players available. He does not determine the players who are available for him that night. But the players that are available for him, he's going to do everything that he can that night to win the game. So with that, you got to get some guys' experience. You've got to develop those guys. You have veterans out there. You've got to get playing time, but how much and who's going to start and all of these things. I think this is a very tricky time as a coach, because you do have a lot of things that you have to accomplish. You do have a lot of things to evaluate and develop. So from that coaching perspective, this is as big a challenge as Chauncey Billups has faced.
Travis, it has some challenging components to it. I don't know that it is as dramatic as we feel. And the reason, let me qualify that statement.
Yeah, please do.
For the 5 years as a college head coach, every year I looked at exhibition games a certain way.
Okay.
Right. I only wanted to play certain guys a little bit because they were going to be my rotation guys, and I knew what I had.
Right.
And so I played other guys more to see what I had. And so I still wanted to win the game, but I had some other goals. that and other currencies that I was observing during the course of the game. And I parallel from that to what we're describing now with this team and with Chauncey. He comes to the arena every night, and he's got A, to look at who's available, B, to look at, from a development standpoint, what this organization needs to find about certain players as pretty high goals within the game plan. And so that's how I would describe what we're referring to as a challenge. It's a business development decision.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, this time of year, it's fascinating to me because you've got teams that are in the position that the Blazers are. You've got teams that are gearing up for a championship run, that are playing the best basketball of their season, and they're gearing up for the final 20 plus games to, you know, improve their playoff seeding and make a run for a championship. You've got other teams that believe they should be in that run, that maybe have made a coaching change recently, that aren't having a lot of success right now, and that are trying to figure out what it is. You look at 30 teams in the NBA right now, and you've got 30 little bubbles of teams that have their own set of goals, and it doesn't line up with anybody else. And it's like, well, hey, that team's not playing their best player tonight. Like, you know, LeBron James last night not playing for the Lakers, and the Warriors win the game. But Blazers fans want the Warriors to lose so they can improve that draft position of that pick. It's fascinating how these final couple of months go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm literally laughing. I'm listening to you, and for some reason, the picture popped in my head of a marathon. I've never run a marathon. I'm not a runner. I didn't like running when I had to train as an NBA player. But for some reason, a marathon popped in my head, right? And I want to describe it in the following way. As you're describing the season and in the context of what we're discussing, if I start a marathon, and I think it's 26 miles, I don't know. And
26.2.
26.2, and I'm on mile 14, or I'm on mile 16, and there's 200 people in this race, and 80 dudes are in front of me. Running that fast. I'm not trying to put my foot on the gas and pass the 20 dudes to finish 61st, right? And so I'm going to just run my race, right? I'm going to run my race. I'm not looking ahead of me. I'm not looking behind me. I'm going to just run my race. And I think the Blazers are in a just run your race, right? What does that mean? We're discussing it. And it can be discussed from so many different angles. It can be discussed from the fan angle, the broadcaster angle, other teams, your peers. At the end of the day, you know, this team has had a difficult season for a number of reasons, health being the biggest one. Mm-hmm. And this team is in a big picture transition post Damian Lillard. Let's just say the quiet part out loud, right? This
team had
a long run with Damian Lillard and company going to the playoffs, I think 9 years in a row. And the transition from good runs like that are turbulent. Some teams do them more quickly than other teams. Some teams do them through trades, others through the draft, others through development. And I think the Blazers are trying to find their way within all of those options.
The fans have been through this before, about 20 years ago. Because you talk about that run into the 90s and early 2000s, what was it, 22 straight years they made the playoffs. And then in 2003, 2004, they were, what, a game or two under 500, didn't make the playoffs. And the team bottomed out, right? That was the year Rasheed Wallace was traded. They move on from other guys. A couple of draft picks did not work out in the lottery. And then they're terrible for a couple of years. And they draft Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge, and now there's this hope, and now the team has some life again, and they're getting better. I'm not saying that's what this is, but this is the NBA. When you follow up a successful run and make dramatic changes that's centered around youth and the future, you're going to get some rough patches, and that's where they are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting you described that timeline because that's when I came on board with Blazer Broadcasting, right?
And that's when I moved to Portland.
The drafting of Brandon Roy. So I didn't catch the quote-unquote jailblazers era. As a broadcaster, I watched it as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched everything else, the Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge, the drafting of Damian Lillard, the drafting of CJ McCollum. And yeah, so it's a fluid situation in the NBA. And, you know, hopefully this team is at a point now where, you know, this is the third non-playoff season, I believe, that it starts to click down the stretch of this season into the offseason, and you start to find the mix talent that can return to the playoff picture.
Other teams in the league have had to go through this. It worked out well for the Thunder. They had some horrific years, but it didn't last for very long. Then you have other franchises like the Sacramento Kings, who went a very long time without making the playoffs. The Minnesota Timberwolves, who went a very long time. Even the Phoenix Suns went a decade being a doormat in the NBA. And now look where they are. There's a number of reasons for that. But there, the point of me bringing that up, Michael, is that they all took different paths. So it's really easy to look at this and say, look what the Rockets did. Look where the Thunder are. Which path do you want to take? Which path is going to put you in a better position? Well, that's where those teams are this year, but we'll see about next year and the year after. There's a blueprint, but there's not. You know what I mean?
Exactly what you mean, Travis, and I'm the optimist, and you know it. I mean, the sun comes up every day. You don't see it some days because of the clouds. It doesn't mean it's not up there. So, you know, it's a process, and this is what I love about pro sports, about live sports. You're dealing with winning and losing. You're dealing with asset management and roster development and chemistry. And that's why it's so exciting. I mean, the Denver Nuggets are going to play the Portland Trailblazers tonight. Anybody can win. Now, you can look at the betting line, and you can look at this and look at that. And I don't look at any of those things, right? I look at the history of the numbers in terms of how both teams are performing. And then I wait till they throw the ball up, and then I tell you what I see.
You know, earlier this year, I know you're going to be ready to roll tonight. We've had a week off. Blazers haven't played since last Thursday. Earlier this year, we had a long road trip, and with like 2 or 3 days left in the road trip, you're like, man, I can't wait to get home. After that, we were home for about 4 or 5 days, and you said to me, man, I can't wait to get back on the road. We haven't been on the road since February 4th. And then we're not going on the road until next Thursday. Are you ready to get back on the road?
No, because we're coming off the All-Star break. I'm rejuvenated. We've got a couple of home games, and I'm locked in. I just want to be at home and get into our home game rhythm of getting to the arena and seeing everybody. And, you know, because we have a home game broadcast family rhythm, right? We have a game day call. We got the media lounge, and, you know, I see the back of your head for an hour. You're running here and you're running there. And, you know, we do what we do, right? And the game starts. The road is totally different. Buses, hotels, arenas we're not very familiar with. It's just different. So I'm not in a hurry for that. I'm in a hurry for this. I want doubling up. I want to see the game.
Let's do it. He's Michael Holton. I'm Travis Demers. This is the Section 113 podcast. Thanks so much for joining us as always. You can hear all Trailblazers broadcasts on the Trailblazers Radio Network and, of course, our flagship station in the Portland area, 620 a.m. Rip City Radio. We'll see you tonight and for the next 24 games. Thanks so much. This has been the Section 113 podcast.